From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. It was the middle of the night, but Penny Rawlings was awake.
Well, I threw up till about 5 o'clock in the morning, cried. My husband tried to calm me down, tried to get me to go to bed. I finally fell asleep about 5:30 and I got up at 8.
Penny was not sick with a bug. She was sick because she had just read a story that made her physically ill, with a combination of fear and guilt, and she needed to contact the reporter.
I was like, I got to get a hold of this lady. I got to tell her that she's on the right track, that this isn't right. People need to know about this.
The lady Penny was trying to reach was my colleague, Reveal reporter Shoshana Walter, who we all call Sho. Eventually, Penny found Sho on Twitter, and they got on the phone.
And it was your article.
Well,
I mean, I thought my knees were going to buckle underneath me when I started reading that.
Sho's story was about a drug rehabilitation center called Centacor, a place Penny had just sent her brother, Tim Rowe.
Could you tell me, like, what happened? Okay, so I'm 51. My brother's 46. He is skilled trades, had a good job, owns his own home, cars, boats, motorcycle, you know.
Penny and her brother, Tim, live in Dayton, Ohio. They grew up right outside the city.
If you watch the news, Dayton, Ohio is pretty much the meth and heroin capital right now. It's really bad here.
Tim used to have a good job, fixing up gigantic printing presses, and he used to live with his wife and three kids. Then, in 2010, he had surgery on his knee and his foot. His doctor prescribed pain pills afterwards. When those ran out, he turned to heroin.
He overdosed 5 times, I found out. Two of them died. And they brought
him back. Two of them, he died?
They brought him back with Narcan.
Narcan, the overdose reversal drug. Penny wanted to save Tim. She tried to be there for his kids and his wife. She found him an attorney. She answered his late-night calls. But she'd reached her limit.
I had pretty much cut my brother out of my life 3 years ago. And we were very close. And I told him, if you don't get clean, I will not help you anymore. I'm done. And I said, do not come to my house unless you're going to knock on the door and say, I need help.
And as Sho tells us, when Tim did come knocking, Penny was there.
Penny and Tim both agreed he should get out of Dayton and go someplace where he didn't have so many connections to drugs. That's when Penny ended up talking to Centacor about its long-term inpatient rehab program. What Centacor told her sounded really good, like in this commercial.
I was lost in my addiction.
Life was spinning out of control.
With residents strolling shady grounds and swimming laps in a sparkling blue pool.
I was gonna die. I was. Until I found Centacor. With treatments tailored to me, that truly worked.
With the counseling I needed.
Centacor understands how hard addiction is.
Centacor can help you right now. We've improved the lives of over 100,000 people with addiction issues like yours. We are affordable, we understand, and we're serious about your recovery. Let us help you get out of the pain and helplessness.
They told me that my brother would be getting 3 group sessions a week and 2 one-on-one sessions a week with a counselor. And I had to pay $3,000, well, almost $3,000 up front to send him there.
Penny handed over her credit card number. Tim got on a plane and made it to Baton Rouge, where he planned to stay for the next 8 months.
They told us that it was 8 months. He would be there 8 months, which is a lie.
Centacor's program was actually 2 years long.
Well, then I found out he was not allowed to talk to us. We were not allowed to have any contact with him.
Not until Tim had been there at least 3 months. No phone calls, no visits. And there was one more issue, a big one. Penny says a Centacor staff member had told her that on-the-job training was part of the program.
I feel pretty thorough. I mean, like, I wanted to know what the program was, what they did. I wanted to make sure he was getting counseling and, you know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
I was very concerned about this work thing. And she was like, oh, no, they only work 20, 30 hours a week.
They work them 7 days a week. 7 days a week.
Without any pay. Sho has gone deep into the world of rehabs that function more like temp agencies than treatment centers. Years before the pandemic, she found rehabs that sent people to work at assisted living facilities and at chicken plants that supplied KFC and Popeyes. After Sho and our former colleague, Amy Julia Harris, first broke these stories in 2017, they were finalists for the Pulitzer Prize. And this spring, when states were locking down, Senecor was still sending people to work where they faced exposure to the coronavirus and they often didn't get gloves or masks. At night, they came home to sleep in dorms with other participants. And again, the people getting this so-called treatment, they don't get paid. The deeper Sho dug, the more people like Penny would turn to her looking for answers.
I've gotten dozens and dozens of calls like these from desperate family members and people stuck inside these rehabs. So when I hung up with Penny, I called Tim.
Well, from what I read, you know, it's a tough program. It's not like your traditional 12-step rehab or whatever. So I thought, well, I'll try it. It's something different. It was definitely different.
Tim says he was expecting a top-notch facility. He saw the pool on Senecor's website and packed 5 pairs of swim trunks. But when he got to Baton Rouge, the facility was one wing in a mostly abandoned former hospital. The pool water was a green, swampy color, and there was almost no time for counseling. After orientation, Senecor sent Tim straight to work. They had him doing electrical work.
I'm not even an electrician.
Did you get any training on how to do that?
No.
They had him making thick steel cables for shipping yards.
I was making those cables. I would sling them over my shoulder, and this big spool that is as big as a car, I had to pull it out 200 feet. I would be so sore the next day.
They sent Tim to a call center where he sat in a cubicle alongside paid workers. On his first day there, he heard a thump in the bathroom. He tried to get his supervisor to check it out, but in the end, Tim says he was the one who pushed the door open and found a worker there, unconscious with a syringe. The guy had overdosed.
You know, I'm still in a treatment facility, and then they put me to work at a job where people are on drugs. I was told that you would help me find a job. I wasn't told that I'd be just thrown into a van and hauled off to some job and be told that I like it or not. I have to do it.
Wow, Tim.
All they do is just work the dog shit out of you, and you don't get paid.
Senecor was keeping all of Tim's wages. And then there was the treatment Tim got. It seemed to work for some of the people at Senecor, but to Tim, it was like nothing he'd ever seen.
It wasn't very straightforward at all, like a 12-step-based program. Or a faith-based program with, you know, religion.
The treatment was based on strange methods, squeezed into the few waking hours he had left after work.
They shaved my head when I was in there.
If he said the wrong thing.
Is that non-support? Go have a seat in the verbal chair for non-support.
If he broke one of the many, many rules.
The verbal chair. That's where I would sit with my hands on my knees, and I'd have to stare straight ahead.
The staff and other participants would yell at him or make him talk to himself in the mirror.
That was called mirror therapy.
Tim was learning a new Senecor language. He had to stare at his reflection and repeat what he did wrong and how he'd fix it.
I, Tim R., have a consistent behavior of talking in my mind.
I, Tim Rowe, have a consistent behavior of being late to the floor.
My positive solution is to stop talking in
deadlines. My positive solution is to set my alarm clock.
I, Tim Rowe, have a consistent behavior. And you just have to keep saying it over and over and over and over.
For how long?
However long they decide. And anytime you ever questioned it, I would be told that it's part of the treatment.
After just a few weeks of this, Tim felt broken. He wondered what could possibly fix him. The answer from everyone, the staff, the other people in the program, was always Senecor.
There were some times where I thought I was going crazy.
Yeah.
It was confusing. I wasn't sure of myself. I didn't know how to act. I was scared to think because everything I did was wrong.
When Tim's sister Penny finally reached him, she says it seemed like Senecor was brainwashing him.
So the two times that he did call here, he was only allowed to talk to us on speakerphone. Okay? And somebody was with him. So he was like, oh, yeah, it's great. You know, it's really great. The food's great. You know, he kept saying the food's great. And I'm like, why does he keep saying that?
Tim just didn't sound like himself.
And then he's like, yeah, just check it out on Senecor. Go check it out online. Well, he was trying to tell us something was going on without them knowing. You know what I mean?
Penny did check it out online. She read my reporting. By this time, I'd co-reported a story investigating Senecor, showing how dozens of people getting treatment there had been horribly injured at work. Broken backs, mangled hands. Somebody had even died at a Senecor job site in the 90s. I'd written about the millions of dollars Senecor was making off this program by sending people to work at job sites for companies like Exxon and Shell. After my stories came out, Shell emailed me that they didn't find evidence that Senecor participants had worked there, and Exxon denied it. But we confirmed that subcontractors for those companies did use Senecor workers. I tried to interview Senecor's CEO back then. He wouldn't talk to us on tape. When Penny learned how Senecor was sending its participants to work, she knew she had to get Tim out. After that sleepless night spent throwing up, she started calling Senecor at 8 a.m.
Couldn't get through. Couldn't get anybody to answer a phone till about 11:30. And I had to call the main Senecor place and go literally crazy to get them to get me transferred to Baton Rouge and make somebody answer that phone.
Penny also called the police and asked them to go check on Tim. An officer went to Senecor and told Tim his sister could fly him home that day. But Tim was surrounded by Senecor people, and he told the officer he was fine. He was too afraid to leave. He ended up sneaking out when no one was looking. He walked out into Baton Rouge, a place he'd never been, with no money and no ID. One of the first open businesses he found was a Comfort Inn. He convinced the woman at the front desk to let him call Penny. She got him on a flight to his mom's house in Florida. When I talked to Tim, he'd been out just a couple days.
How does it feel to be out of there?
It feels good. It feels good. I'm just sitting here. I'm like looking up at the sky and just kind of walking and talking. I haven't been able to talk about any of this.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't do that at Senecor. You don't get that kind of therapy. You get work therapy. Whatever the hell that is.
Work therapy, whatever the hell that is. That's my first question. I have more. Penny does too.
Yeah, no, I'm really serious. I really want you guys to... I mean, there has to be laws being broke here. People working like that, I mean, that's slave labor. I mean, we outlawed slavery. I can't wrap my head around it. I can't be the only person.
No, you're definitely not the only person.
Joe's been investigating this story for years to get answers to some pretty basic questions.
How many programs like Senecor are out there? How many people end up in these programs? And where did this idea even come from?
Over the next 6 weeks, we're going to track down the answers. This is American Rehab.
It's the best thing that I've ever seen for the right people. Last chance people. If you don't take advantage of this, you're never going to see sunshine again for the rest of your life.
Each episode will bring us closer to the truth.
Because it is cult-like.
They had pig masks on. They had bars of soap and brushes, like, hanging from their necks.
Every story we hear, every document we uncover, lays another tile in the mosaic.
Look, I had 45 years over my head, so I didn't care if they told me to jump through a flaming hula hoop and, you know, eat a bucket of shit. I was gonna eat some shit and jump through some fire.
Show teams up with reporters Laura Starcheski and Ike Sriskandaraja. And the story, it takes turns we could never have imagined.
And he threw me on the floor and he put the gun in my face.
You're and kidding. This is terrible. This was not what I was expecting you to tell me.
Well, this is the truth.
Yeah, we brainwash them because their brain is dirty.
That has a positive connotation to you?
Yeah.
From a cult to a prison to the White House.
I was glancing through your Senecor booklet, and I liked the very first sentence I read. In all the years that Senecor has been in business, rehabilitating lives, we have found that nothing works as well as work itself.
We uncover a shadow workforce.
Hey, Shay, my name's Shoshana Walter. I'm a reporter with Reveal. I'm calling up various low-cost rehab programs.
A workforce of tens of thousands of people working without pay or for pennies on the dollar, even as the pandemic ramped up.
They don't enforce social distancing or anything like that. They were making us go to work. You're supposed to wear gloves, but they didn't have any gloves.
This is American Rehab, the story of people desperate for treatment trapped in the gears of a rehab machine. This story is way too big for a single episode of Reveal, so you heard that right. We're doing something special. Over the next 6 weeks, we're going to dedicate Reveal to telling this story and exposing this truth. It's a wild ride, and believe me, you don't want to miss a single episode. The first question we answer, where did all of this begin? That's coming up in Chapter 2, Miracle on the Beach.
We can take credit for literally getting thousands and thousands and thousands of people off of crippling addiction, fatal addiction. We have done that. We've done it here.
I didn't know it was going to turn into what the fuck it did, man, going out and beating up on people, man, and guns and rattlesnakes and mailboxes.
You can listen to that story right now in Reveal's podcast feed. The American Rehab reporting team is Shoshana Walter, Laura Starcheski, and Ike Sriskandaraja. Brett Myers is our editor. Laura is our lead producer and produced this episode. Amy Julia Harris helped us report this story from the beginning and launch the project. AJ, we miss you so much. Seriously. We had additional editorial support from Narda Zucchino, Andy Donahue, and Esther Kaplan, and production help from WHYY in Philadelphia. Fact-checking by Rosemarie Ho, and Victoria Baranetsky is our general counsel. Our production manager is Mwende Inahosa. Our production team includes Najib Amini, Catherine Miskowski, and Amy Mustafa. Our theme song, Lifeline, is by my man, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Fernando My Man Yo Aruda. They composed and performed all the music for American Rehab. Our CEO is Krista Scharfenberg. Matt Thompson is our editor-in-chief. And our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Heising Simons Foundation, the Democracy Fund, and the Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Edson. And remember, there is always more to the story.